Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Simon Phipps joins me. We're going to be talking about application lifecycle management with a total open source solution, Tuleap. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Simon Phipps. Episode 367, recorded December 15th, 2015. Tuleap. This episode is brought to you by DigitalOcean, simple and fast cloud hosting built for developers. Deploy an SSD cloud server in 55 seconds. Try it today for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com, and once you sign up, be sure to enter the promo code FLOSS in the billing section for a $10 credit. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open-source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, BerlinistOnEdge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the little projects, the projects you might not have ever heard of and want to go immediately play with right after this show. Not while you're driving, though. Important safety tip. All right, and projects that you may be using every day and not actually aware of it. Joining me today is none other than our wonderful Simon Phipps. Simon, welcome back to the show.
Why, thank you very much. I'm here in a very dark, slightly damp England, waiting excitedly for the show to start.
Yeah, I don't think I've co-hosted with you for like, what, about 3 months, 2 months?
It's getting to be so long now that I expect the folk on Wikipedia are going to start thinking I don't do the show anymore.
Well, you can always fix that because that is a wiki, so that works really well. And for those of you watching the video, you can see that I'm back in my wonderful home in beautiful downtown Beaverton, Oregon. And it is very gray outside today, and I was sort of sad because I came from a very sunny 2 weeks down in SoCal in Mexico, and all of a sudden now I'm back here. But I'm expecting to drive around in the rain today, so it'll be kind of fun. Anyway, joining us this week will be a couple of the people representing the Tuleap project, which is it's a project lifecycle management thingy. So it's like, you know, you got to track stuff somehow. So there's lots and lots of commercial solutions like Jira. There's lots and lots of open source solutions like the project trackers and bug trackers in for GitHub and those kinds of things. But this seems to be a really comprehensive open source solution to the problem. Have you looked at this at all, Simon?
Only in passing, I got the show notes and had a look at it. It looks like it's a very comprehensive set of glue for joining together a whole range of tools. So yeah, I'm interested to hear how it works in practice.
Yeah, and it looks like it has a really agreeable open source license, but you can get into that a little bit later as we go through the show. We're going to be having two people join us from the project. That'd be Manuel Vasile and Matteo Mazzari, which I probably murdered their names, but there we go. We'll get them to spell, to pronounce their own names in a minute or two. And before we bring on our guests, we have a very important announcement from a very important sponsor. Because whether you're an experienced code warrior or just getting started, you need flexible, reliable, and affordable hosting. DigitalOcean provides developers with Droplets, which are virtual private servers that can be customized and deployed quickly to host websites, web apps, production applications, personal projects, virtual desktops, and almost anything else you can think of with full root access. I myself have been a DigitalOcean customer since back in February when I found out they had FreeBSD. FreeBSD, that's my preferred preferred operating system in the cloud. Boy, I'll let anybody do this show. Because DigitalOcean is built for developers and is used by over 400,000 of them, including me. You can deploy and configure your Droplets via a streamlined control panel or simple API. You can choose your OS, Ubuntu, CentOS, Debian, Fedora, CoreOS, and FreeBSD. And a one-click install allows you to quickly deploy apps like Django, Docker, Drupal, LAMP, GitLab, MediaWiki, Node.js, WordPress, Ghost, Magento, OwnCloud, Ruby on Rails, and more. The servers are built on hex core machines with dedicated ECC RAM and RAID SSD storage. Servers can have up to 20 CPUs, 64 gigs of RAM, and 640 gigs of SSD hard drive space. And there's auto backups and snapshots to let you easily clone, deploy, and resize Droplets as you grow. Have an extremely active community with a large and detailed set of tutorials on all the ways you can use your Droplet. Want to deploy Docker? Set up a mail server? They've got you covered. And it's so easy to get started. You can deploy an SSD cloud server in as little as 55 seconds. DigitalOcean has incredibly affordable and straightforward pricing. Servers start at only $5 per month. There are also hourly pricing available starting at just less than a penny an hour. But we're going to make it so you can get started today and deploy an SSD cloud server for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com and create an account. Once you confirm your email and account information, go to the billing section and enter the promo code FLOSS for a free $10 credit. That's digitalocean.com. And once you sign up, enter the code FLOSS in the billing section for a $10 credit. And we thank DigitalOcean for their sponsorship of Floss Weekly. And now let's go ahead and bring on our guests. We'll start with Manuel. Manuel Vasilei, welcome to the show.
Hey. Hi, Randall.
Hi, where are you speaking to us from?
I'm in a very dark room. It's already in the night for France. I'm in the middle of the mountains. I've got big mountains with snow just in front of my window right now.
Wonderful, wonderful. And Matteo Mazzari, welcome to the show as well.
Hello. Hi, thanks. Happy to be here.
And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm in France as well, not too far from Manuel Vasselet, in a place which is called Aix-les-Bains. I'm in the middle of the mountains as well, and there's a nice little lake around here.
Awesome, awesome. I've been to France a couple times, but only on cruise ships. I have no idea what the rest of the country looks like. But yes, I went down the Rhone that goes down through France?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, I've been on a riverboat down the Rhone, which was kind of fun. And I've connected at Charles de Gaulle accidentally a few times. I try to avoid it when I can. But enough about me traveling. Manuel, let's start with you. What? Give us a 30,000-foot view. What is Tulip and what problem is it solving?
Yeah, basically, Tulip is the most comprehensive set of tools when you want to do software development and project management. Simon said earlier that it's a nice glue of several tools that fit well together. Actually, it's more than that because, of course, we are gluing some tools because we don't want to reinvent the wheel when it comes from software file management like SVN or Git. But some tools are also designed and developed inside Tulip to fit our needs because we found that there was no good ways to achieve some of the features we wanted to do. For instance, the whole purpose of Tulip is to provide the set of tools that the software team need when they want to develop. So they need, of course, to archive their developments with, let's say, Git, but they also need to discuss with a project manager or a scrum master and the product owner if they are doing agile. And for this part, we decided to develop a whole new set of tools to do agile and project management. And it's called Tulip Trackers. But Tulip, it also addresses some of the other needs, like discussion with the forums or mailing list, for instance. And we do also manage the delivery of the project with a file release system and the documentation as well. At the root of the project, we have something that once was cool. It was SourceForge at the origin. Do you remember SourceForge, Randall?
Yeah, I'm old enough. I think Simon is too. So I think we both remember SourceForge.
SourceForge, when it was not this kind of piggy set of ads-backed softwares, was a very cool project at the origin. It was something made by especially Tim Perdue. He's passed, so we thank him to create this project at the origin. And at the origin, SourceForge was a really big platform to share code between developers way before GitHub was a thing. And at the origin, Tulip is a fork of SourceForge when VA Software decided to buy what SourceForge was. It was the origin of all the bad things we can see today for SourceForge.net. And Tulip evolved in various companies to be reborn 4 years ago with our company, Enelin. And we decided that there was a need for a comprehensive set of tools designed for software, free software engineers, but those software engineers could be not only in the open source community, but also in more private contexts. And we made modifications and improvements on the whole SourceForge code base to make Tulip great and a very comprehensive set of tools like it is today.
Wow. It wasn't clear from your website that this was something related to SourceForge. That would be kind of a key feature for us geezers to see, you know, when we were reading over the site. Mateo, let's go with you a little bit. How did you get involved with the project and what's your relationship with it now?
I actually fell in love with a presentation that Laurent Charles, which is the CEO of Enaline, the company that develops Tulip, gave once a few months ago. And I fell in love with the whole concept, with the product, with the view, with the vision. And I've always been active in the open source community by organizing conferences, by talking about it and getting people converted. And so I really fell in love with this project. And now I am sort of being an evangelist for Tulip.
Nice.
It's quite recent. It's only been a few months now.
Well, what is this solving? I mean, talk more about, you know, we've been bouncing around the buzzwords. In fact, anybody playing buzzword bingo has probably got half their card full by now. we use words like agile and application lifecycle management. What does that really mean practically to me as a developer?
Well, essentially it's to facilitate and accelerate the way you work. As a developer, you have to work in teams. Teams are always bigger and often they are widespread around the whole world. And somehow the software is becoming the central part of any innovative company. So what happens is that you need to coordinate a lot of information that goes around developing software, whether it's the requirements, whether it's talking to people, what are you going to do during your week? And have you got any bugs? Have you got to test your code? So there are so many different aspects that have to be coordinated and matched to each other in order for you not to get lost in the quantity of information. And Tulip essentially gives you a single entry point into the whole life cycle of the whole project team and company working on a development. So there's the agile part and the project management part, which, as Manuel said, essentially is totally configurable to the way you work. Whether you're working in more modern agile modes, it can be configured in a Scrum mode. Again, a few keywords, but somehow they're essential. We can go into the details of what that means later on if you want. Or you can configure it in a Kanban view, or you can mix the two. And instead, if you're working in a more traditional waterfall style, you can also configure Tulip to adapt not only to the whole company, but to the way each specific team is working. That's one of the beauty of Tulip, is that it's totally configurable. It's the beauty, but it also takes a little bit of setup time because you have to set it up in order to match the way you want it to work. And then once you've decided what you had to work on using the different planning modes, you can access your code. And that's where the different plugins enter into game. It interfaces with the whatever server version code you're using, whether it's Git or others. Then it integrates with Jenkins for testing and continuous integration. Then you can also do code review, so make sure that the quality of your code is correct. Today, the best practice is to do code review, so it integrates with Garrett that allows you to manage all the code review. So you can really, from Tulip, handle everything. And of course, once you deploy your code, it's out, it's been tested. You have also manual tests. All the automatic tests have been done. There's all the manual tests. And also Tulip allows you to facilitate that process by letting you describe for each test what has to be done, and when you're doing the code, the validation of the new release, everybody can say, "Okay, I'm doing this," simply by getting it from the program, and everyone else sees that this test is being done. And if it's passed, it will be green, or if it's red, it means that it's not passed. Or you can block it and say with any comments why you had to block it. And so once the tests have gone, the software can be deployed. And eventually, if there are still some bugs that have been through, there's all the part that allows you to track the bugs. And the beauty is that every little step of the way can be cross-referenced and linked. So you can know what requirements was necessary to do which code had delivered what bug, and it becomes a pleasure to really track things, and essentially you waste a lot less time.
Yeah, one of my clients uses just a file in a Dropbox called To Do. He keeps putting things up at the top, and then I just delete them. That's my entire interface with him. And there's always real brief things. It's never full explanatory. So I have to actually get him on the phone or something. What the heck do you mean by this? But my other main client, yeah, it's crazy. I'm trying to get him to use something like something a lot more like a bug tracking system. So no, I don't want to do that. I want to control exactly what you do when you're doing it. So I don't put anything in that file that you're not going to work on immediately. So I said, oh, great. So no, we don't have a bug tracking system. But my other primary client's a lot better. We have we're using fog bugs, I think, as part of it, and we linked that to our BuildBot system, so that as we deploy, we've got scripts that actually move the status of the fog bugs bug from in test or production, whatever. So we actually can see all that. But it sounds like this would be a much more of an out of the box solution for that sort of thing. Can you compare this to some of the other setups like GitHub Tracker and fog bugs and Jenkins and stuff?
Yeah, you can compare it and you can integrate them actually somehow. Yeah, okay. For certain things, you're actually using Jenkins. We are not redoing it. We're simply creating modules that communicate with Jenkins. Concerning the out-of-the-box part, it's there is a lot of configuration to do to make it really work as you want, but then everything really flows. And of course, if there's just one person or two person, maybe you can use a to-do list. But the thing is that when, apart from the fact that we have companies with just two people that use to leave and they're really happy about it, but then again, you can also do it otherwise. But for example, there's we've got Orange, which is the French provider of telephony, that has today deployed over 17,000 people using Tulip, one instance of Tulip, actually, to coordinate all the different projects. So when you get, big teams working together, getting on a to-do list gets really hard and quickly messy.
Yeah, it's it probably would be. I keep thinking, it's the other thing he said is the client that uses the to-do list and the file is that he said, he's got two other contractors working for him, and so we really do have four people that need to communicate. And I keep saying, well, no, we should have like a Kanban set up, where we can see who's working on what. He says, no, I'm the only one that needs to know who's everybody's working on. You don't need to know. I guess it would be nice if I could coordinate with my other contractors, but it's life. I don't know if I can get him to change about that. Manuel, I think you got a little bit into this. How did this come about as a project? I mean, what started this?
What started this is an interesting story. In my previous company, I was working for a big silicon manufacturer in France, and back in the beginning of 2000, they had a big question because they realized that they were hiring more software developers than hardware developers, even if they were semiconductor manufacturers. And they asked the question, what kind of tools those people are using? We don't even understand what they are saying. They are talking about code source, sharing things between different sites. And so they were looking for tools that allowed several thousands of people to work together on source code. And back in this time, the only solutions that were really relevant were open source solutions, because there were already more than 1,000 people working together, and they were sharing source code, mainly source code, but other things quickly came up. But they were already in the same setup than people inside the company. The only difference was that they could not use an internet-based solution for various reasons. So they had to use something inside the company network. So basically, the root of the project was we want to have the same working pattern than open source, but inside our company. So this is why we took SourceForge and we put SourceForge, the open source SourceForge, inside the company. But soon you realize that when you are working in a corporate environment, managing source code on basic backtracking is not enough. And the more you go, and the more you need in terms of management tools. Let's take an example. You were talking earlier about what is the difference between Tulip and, let's say, GitHub trackers for tracking things, or Bugzilla or whatever. The main thing is that when you are working in a big company, and in a way in any software company, most of the teams tend to work in a slightly different manners. And when they are working in a slightly different manners, it's not just because they want to do the things differently, but they, sometimes, and most of the time, it's because they need to address different markets. They need to take into account different constraints due to the industry. And basically, when you want to make those people work with only one tool, let's say one Bugzilla configured with one template, they quickly need to work around the Bugzilla limitation, because they can track this space related to their, ISO process or CMMI requirement or whatever. And if they have only one tool to address their concern, they are quickly stuck with this tool. So what we proposed is to have something that people can configure on the thing that is a bit difficult to get when you are doing when you are working only on small teams, is that when you need to adapt the template of your the layout of the bug you want to track, it's quickly a pain. For instance, if you're on the GitHub, you cannot modify at all the things you need to track. If you are on Jira, you need to rely on an administrator to do this this kind of things. And when you are 10,000 of people manage project, not to manage project, but to run project, you cannot just have a team of administrator just here to configure or tune the parameters of your bug tracker, or your source code, your whatever. Each team needs to be autonomous and have the possibility to figure the things they need to work on to be able to adapt to the change in the market. As of today, doing software is mainly being able to adapt quickly to your market. And if your tools are not able to adapt quickly, you will be soon stuck with your tool, and you will have to do the painful migration from one tool to another. And if you have a set of tools, let's say you handle different stacks, one for your backtracking, one for your requirement, one for your test, one for each source code your teams are using, if you need to move one of those things or all those things on a regular basis, it's wasting a lot of effort for almost nothing in your IT infrastructure.
Okay. So that all sounds very concrete. I'm very interested in finding out a little bit more about your open source credentials. I see on your website that you talk about how it's a Libre open source project under the GPL. Could you tell me a little bit more about that licensing and how the project is structured?
Yeah, that's quite easy because as we inherited from SourceForge, we had to stick with the GPL v2. So even if we forked a long time ago, we are still developing modules in GPL. So basically, 100% of the solution is open source and available on tulip.org. And you just have to configure a remote on your RPM configuration and you get all the software. On the license side, there is nothing much to say than it's GPL.
Right. So do you have a premium version or a commercial version of the software, or is everything that you do all in that open source code base?
As a company, we do have a commercial product, but it's a commercial it's more a commercial solution than a commercial product. What we sell as a company is supported version of Tulip. When you start running Tulip in a critical environment, when you are a big company, when you have constraints like having access to your server guaranteed with 99% and things like that, we do sell support for that, and we support also old version, LTS version of Tulip for those customers. But we don't do what you can see quite often in open source, is that what we call open core, with the core of the tool being open source, but it's often the less interesting parts of the tools that are open source. And if you want to do something serious, you have to pay. It's not at all the case with Tulip. Everything, even the enterprise things like LDAP or Agile, Kanban, Scrum things are open source, and we are even proud to make it open source first, and it's why our customers are relying to us.
Right. So now, how is that working out for you? Because when I talk about that model with other companies who I won't name, they tell me that isn't profitable, that you have to have something secret or proprietary in order to make a profit. Do you think that's true?
Somewhat. There are several answers to that question. First, when you are doing with business, you have to make something that is not available publicly for your customers. And in our case, it's the LTS versions, the long-term support version of Tulip that are only available to our customers. So the backport we are doing from Tulip Master, the builds that are available to anybody to long-term support are not available to the community. But there is one thing that is quite different between Tulip and other open source companies, is that we don't have to pay for an upfront cost of development, because 100% of our developments are paid by our customers before we do the actual work. This is what we call open roadmap.
Right. So tell me a little bit more about community around Tulip. Do you have a community around it, or is it all developed by your company?
In terms of community, we are suffering of one thing, is that we are not really known for the time being. So we have a few contributors outside Enalin from some of our customers and from hobbyists. But so far, even if we are now 8 developers at Enalin working on Tulip, and we have three regulars, four regulars, contributors outside the company, and one or two people that are contributing from time to time, but not on a regular basis.
Right. So how many customers do you have for this software? Because you're in quite a well-populated space, what with, you know, there's CollabNet, who have been in business for a long time. You've got the Australian folks who just went public. You've got GitHub in your space. You've got SourceForge has released Apache Allura in that space. So how are you positioned in that competitive space? Are you a leader in that space, or are you really trying to create a name for yourself at the moment?
We are competing with a lot of people, for sure, but there are a few things that are quite different for us. First, we are open source. This is something very important when you are comparing against CollabNet or Altasian or equivalents. We are the only available solution when you want to do ALM, application lifecycle management, and you want to do open source. There is no other alternative than Tulip when you want to do both. If you don't want to go open source, there are plenty of alternatives. If you want to do open source, you can do it by plugging some things together, like let's say Redmine or GitLab and a more powerful bug tracking system and stuff like that. But in the end, you don't have something that covers the whole application lifecycle management area. So basically what we want to achieve in terms of market is to address the need of people that want to turn into development software development and to offer an alternative to companies that are fighting against shadow IT.
Right. So do you have very many commercial deployments at the moment? You mentioned Orange earlier. Do you have any other big commercial deployments?
We have between 10 and 20 customers for the at the moment. Most of them are big companies. Some want to keep the secret because they feel that it's a competitive advantage, so I cannot cite them. But we are working in a few different areas with telecom companies, semiconductor companies. We also have some deployment in defense and space, but so far the biggest deployments are in semiconductor industry and telecom industry with more than 10,000 people using Tulip with thousands of users on a daily basis in those companies. And, for the short story about how Tulip can be critical in those companies, one of our customers evaluated that one day of downtime of Tulip inside the company costs $1 million per day of loss.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I'm just looking at your website at the moment, trying to get an idea about what sort of a community you have. Still not really seeing a hook on that. So the code is quite old. Why is there not a big community around it?
I'm not sure. We are not very good at marketing. This is why Matteo joined us lately, and we did not really made a strong push on come to see us. I want to see him. Maybe with the Flash podcast, we will get some contributors and some users. But I think we are suffering of one thing is that people don't like PHP that much, especially in the area of software development tools those days. When you look at our recent competitors, we see a lot of people using Ruby on Rails or Go as a primary programming language. And from a pure contributor point of view, contributing to a PHP project is not that cool in 2015. Maybe it will change with the latest changes of PHP 7 that was released a couple of days ago. But I think this is one of the explanations. Maybe we started a bit late in terms of development, so we are maybe also suffering of not that cool project. Let's say if you contribute to Docker as of today, it's very popular, and there is some kind of fashion around contributing to this kind of project. Contributing to an application lifecycle management tool is less sexy, I would say.
Right. So maybe I should ask Matteo then. You know, Matteo, I see lots of open source communities for some reason using Atlassian's tools, probably because Atlassian has got this free offer for free hosting for open source projects. So are you taking some kind of a marketing initiative to get yourself known by open source projects who, in my experience, would very much prefer to use open source tools if only they knew about them? Is this one of your initiatives at the moment?
Absolutely. My aim is to get to leave known to the world, which unfortunately is not yet the case, because when people start using it, whether there are communities or companies, they just love it because it's got everything integrated and everything so handy. So my main effort now is to get to it known and to facilitate access to the community and to create an active community. So That's my job number one.
So how easy is it to get started with Tulip? You know, it's PHP. It looks to me like it's probably kind of old code. How easy is it going to be for me to get it installed on my own systems here?
We've got an online demo, which is only a demo, but you can play with it. It's fully functional. I've got the link in the show notes. Then there's an appliance that we are making available. The appliance for now has no configuration, so it's an empty shell that you have to configure. So what I'm working on now is to prepare standard configurations according to different types of teams, so that you can download the appliance and launch it on a virtual box, and then import a configuration so that you can get a Tulip configured to the sort of way you want to work. And then once you have done that, you will be able to easily start and use it and tailor it to your own needs. And then what I want to do is to be able for people to share their configuration. So create a community of people who have done a configuration, say, okay, this is how I use Tulip, and why don't you want to try it this way? You know, so that it facilitates the access to a sort of a working Tulip. Because today, we don't have a SaaS offer, and so you have to actually install it. If you want to install it in a server yourself, you can also download the full source code and install it totally and suit it completely. But hopefully in 1 month, we will have a test data that you can import into a virgin appliance and tailor Tulip to your needs.
You're going to need it to make it at least as easy as spinning up a Jira instance for most projects who seem to toss that around as an easy thing to do. So are you going to adopt some trendy container technologies it's more easily deployable?
It's already on the way. We already have Docker containers that you can download and get running. They will need configurations. That's what I'm working on now. And today, one thing that we have is for students an online, already functional Tulip, which is called Campus, Tulip Campus, that allows any student who has a project to put a project on Tulip and get it working and start working with Tulip straight away. And so that's one way to start using it. I mean, if you're already a student today, you can just go on Tulip Campus and start away.
How do you define a student there? Is that anybody that's in education somewhere? Or could it be also the instructors?
Well, we don't necessarily need a formal definition of a student. The thing is that the project will actually be open and it will not be able to configure it as a company. So somehow it will have some limits that will sort of tend to stop companies from using it.
It still sounds like this project has is mostly internally driven by the commercial side of things. Do you have like some sort of separate governance committee that sort of agrees on the future roadmap?
That's what we call the open roadmap that Manuel Vasslet was telling about before. We group the needs of our customers, the needs of the communities, and our vision together into this roadmap, which is an open roadmap and people can actually access and see it. And then it's actually the customers that decide to put story points on a feature from the roadmap and get it developed.
Oh, okay. That sounds pretty open. And what's this like in terms of other technology? You mentioned PHP. What else are we using under the hood here?
I think Manuel Vasslet can answer that better than me for the time
being. Okay, we'll give it a throw to him then. Manuel?
Welcome back. In terms of technology, we are in the middle of a quite big shift right now because all the new developments are done in AngularJS in terms of front-end for all the things that are run inside the browser, backed up by strong REST APIs. And as I already said, the backend is written mainly in PHP. We are also quite big fan of, as everybody, of Docker. As Matteo mentioned, we do have the Docker containers for Tulip. And you can run Tulip outside the Docker Hub with just a Docker run Tulip dash all-in-one in your favorite Docker command line. Mainly the big shift today is to move to AngularJS for front-end development.
Ooh, Angular. 2.0, you use the new stuff yet?
No. 1.x, 1.4 as of today, because we started, we already have quite a big development in AngularJS, so moving to Angular 2.0 right now is quite a challenge, but I'm sure that people will deliver some tools to help the migration soon.
Yeah, I'm looking at using Angular 2.0 with Dart. So I'm looking at the Angular documentation. Unfortunately, there's no Dart documentation. It all just says, look at the JS documentation. That's exactly what we are. And I go, no, quite. It's doesn't have the right examples and everything like that. Sandman in the chat room actually had the same question I was about to ask, which is, how much hardware do you need? You know, if I have like 50 developers, what do I need to play this on?
If you have 50 developers, what you would need as a server, you would say?
Yeah.
With almost anything, even a Raspberry Pi would do the thing. Actually, as of today, we are able to run for 1,000 of developers on two CPU box. You mentioned some DigitalOcean small package at the beginning of the show. Those are perfectly fit for running Tulip for most of the deployments. As of today, if I take our largest deployment, they have 15,000 developers with 4,000 developers daily using Tulip with a massive usage of Git This is a 32 gigabyte RAM server with an octo processor. The only thing that is really important is to have very efficient disk system, because when you are doing a Git or Subversion, you are really I/O bound. So you need fast I/O to have good performances, but we don't consume a lot of horsepower to run Tulip.
Cool, cool. It means my friends at DigitalOcean would be happy to hear this by having a Docker container deploy of Tulip and be able to run with even one of their smaller machines. Sounds really, really cool. We're almost out of time. We're starting to wrap up here. But just a couple questions I haven't gotten to yet that you gave me to ask. What's TulipCon?
It's for Matteo, this one.
Okay, sorry. Matteo, please.
Okay. TulipCon, it's a conference that we started. We had the first edition this October, last fall, and we gathered most of our customers, some of the community, and most of our team together in Paris, where we had a gathering. And it was essentially a number of workshops around real case histories. What's been really nice is to see that customer got together and they were really sharing tips on how to use Tulip and getting things done for real, whether it was massive deployments with several machines or even just new customers who just got started, and they were all sharing tips. So it's our conference, and next year, really looking forward to the next edition.
And that's probably a question getting back for Manuel, but where did the name Tulip come from?
Okay. It's for me, this one, and I don't know if I need to be proud. It was a kind of bad play of word as a Frenchman for the leap word, and we wanted our users to leap to their next software development, and we are quite fine of flowers too, so we made sort of a mix between the flower and this bad play of word.
Okay. Yeah, actually, Simon and I chatted about that it might be one of the possible solutions. That was good. And let me see if we got everything else I want to talk about here. I don't think we actually got into what is Agile. Matteo, want to take that one a little bit and try to explain what you mean by that buzzword?
There's a lot behind this buzzword. What we need to do today is to be reactive and ready to answer to a real need. So instead of the old waterfall method where you had to prepare specifications for a long time, then do the requirements and then go and develop and test eventually to find out that your product wasn't actually matching the market, and then you had to go back and start everything again. Today we have methods that allow us to accelerate all this process and sort of very, very quickly have a prototype that we can test, and we can get feedback directly so that we can improve it and start working with real things. Tulip, for example, we deliver every month a new release to our customers and to the community, because it's delivered to everybody at the same time, so that people can straight away get the novelties if they want, and they can also give us feedback that can be taken into account immediately. So in two words, it's just a way to be responsive and to deliver a product and optimize the cost, because the earlier you can do the modifications or find the bugs, the less impact on your cost of production it will have.
Okay, that makes sense. I already knew that, but I just wanted to make sure our audience also knew that. I ask questions for which I mostly know the answers to typically, so that's always good. That's part of being a good interviewer. So, at one of my clients, not the one that uses the little to-do list in the Dropbox, but the other one, we actually do a release every single day. And half of that seems to be bug fixes that were introduced the previous day. And half of that is these longer-term branches they'll stay out and get for quite a while, and then they land those and then break a bunch of other things. So it's a pretty amusing cycle. But we do use bug tracking systems, and I don't think they use a bug tracking system for the longer branches. Actually, they probably do. I think they do. They kind of work against some bug tracking thing. So yeah. Well, like I said, we're almost out of time. We'll go first with you, Manuel. Is there anything we haven't asked you want to make sure our audience is aware of?
Could you repeat, please? I didn't get the question.
Yes. Well, the question is a meta question. Is there anything we haven't asked that you would like our audience to be aware of?
I think the most important as of today is that we released a couple of days ago the Scrum part of Tulip in the V2. This is a major move for us because it took 1 year and a half to mature this part. This is one of the things I talked a couple of minutes ago about moving to AngularJS. So we released a couple of days ago the new version of the planning part that is quite a big move for us because we want to address very large agile teams with thousands of people, not thousands, hundreds of people. It's already a good thing on a very large backlog. And we got quite good feedback on this was built together with the community and our customers, and we are quite proud about that. So the main thing as of today is that go try Tulip and do some Scrum with our new dashboard.
Cool. And I have two required questions that I have to ask everyone. What's your favorite scripting language?
For me, it's Bash. I'm a Bash
lover. Okay, that's fine. And your favorite text editor?
I have to admit that I'm a NetBeans user, but my heart goes to Emacs.
Oh, nice. I got a half a point there. That's really cool. And Manuel, the same three questions. Anything we didn't say that you want to make sure gets covered? Or about Tayo?
I just want to tell everybody that we are looking forward to a thriving community. So please send us feedback, ideas, contact us. We're just happy to hear from anybody, anywhere. Concerning the scripting languages, I tend to like Bash and PHP. And okay. Editor, I am fan of Emacs. I've been using Emacs since the first time it was back in 1990, so for a long time. And GNU Emacs.
Yay! points. There's a little bit of my code in every copy of Emacs. That's why I'm happy when say Emacs. I wrote the Lisp pretty printer, and it was actually called Brilliant by Richard Stallman. So yeah, so that's why I put it in as part of the text editor. So that was great. So yeah, I wrote the pretty printer. There wasn't one before that. Yeah,
I used to do crazy things on Emacs back then. I mean, having, terminals open and scripting and everything was fantastic.
Good. I actually run my Emacs inside a TMUX session. So I basically reboot Emacs about once a month. Works really well. Well, guys, thanks for coming on and talking about this. And I will talk to this also about to my my two clients, if one of them will at least start something besides a paper to-do list. But it sounds really good. So thanks for coming on the show and talking about it.
Thank you for having us. It was a big pleasure.
Very good. Yeah. Very good.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye. That was Manuel Vasile and Mateo Matsuri. Still murdering his name. What do you think, Simon?
I think you were murdering his name, Randall.
I know I'm murdering his name. That's the easy part.
Well, it's fascinating. After all these years, I was completely unaware that project existed. And considering that it's a fork of SourceForge, which has gone on itself to become an Apache project, Allura, you would think I would have run into it at some point. It all sounds fascinating, and I know so many projects that have despaired of there being a real open source ALM and have gone off and against their principles, have used Atlassian's products to run their project. And there ought to be so many open source communities out there who are excited to hear about this and go and investigate it. It sounds like so many people should be finding out about it.
Yeah, I know. And it's also interesting. I mean, I know a couple of my previous clients have used GitHub Enterprise because they're familiar with the GitHub model, but that's not open source. It's just you can host it in your own location. And this looks like a good alternative or something you can plug in with their local Git. And I think they mentioned GitLab. I know ZipRecruiter is using GitLab as well with their integration with stuff on there. But yeah, this sounds like a really nice thing. I'm going to actually go in and play around, take a look at it. Their website could use some work because it took me a lot of page hits to figure out what the heck this thing was. So that's always one place to improve your community is to figure out how to actually talk about things to your people. Get people on there that are professional communicators like me. You know, that's kind of the way to go with that. Anything else before we move on?
Well, I'd just like to say that I'm available for hire as well. So
Yes. All right.
No, I figure that they if they were to just say that they were what SourceForge would be today if it had been developed by an open source community for a decade, that would immediately tell everybody what they were.
Exactly.
I agree with you. It took me ages to work out what was going on.
I think, you know, and maybe they think it's only geezers that remember SourceForge, but hey, you know, that was the big game in the day. I mean, that was the place.
Maybe it's not so much of an asset to associate yourself with the spammer's favorite destination for malware downloads.
Yeah, that and it, you know, SourceForge. Even if you go there today, it looks pretty dated. It looks like, wow, was this made in the 90s? Well, yes, as a matter of fact, it was. it's not much updated. It is nice to hear that they're using AngularJS. That Angular could do some really amazing things, make really responsive and reactive sites. That's why I'm trying to add it to my repertoire as well, either as AngularJS directly or as Angular used with Dart. So I hope to be doing a lot more front-end work now that I've got real tools coming up. So that'll be really cool. All right, well, let's move on before I run out of time here. So let's talk about the upcoming guests. Next week, I'm really excited about this show, and I really want everybody to tune into this one. Stephen Ressler, who has been a speaker on many of our cruises, Insight Cruises, my other client, the one that uses the to-do list in the Dropbox. He is a professional instructor. He works, for West Point. Yeah, West Point Academy, and teaches people to build bridges, build buildings, and how that all works out. And he was on a recent cruise, and he was talking about this thing called the Bridge Designer Contest, where he actually, his brother writes software. It's going to be both two of them are going to come on the show, and writes the software in Java, unfortunately, that simulates how a bridge actually works. So you put in the things with the struts and the supports and things like that, and then you run truckloads over it. And the job in the contest, this is for high school students all over the U.S., at least, I think, is to build a bridge using the least number of struts and things, so for least cost, it computes a cost constantly, and it still supports the weight of the trucks that you want with enough safety margin in it. So the new swatch of the contest starts real soon. So it's a timely show, and hopefully you can get your school involved, your kids involved with this. It'll be really fun. You can still use the Bridge Designer even if you're not actually in the contest, but you can't enter the contest unless you're in high school age. That's going to be up next week. That's going to be a great show to end the year out. We're skipping a week for the New Year's Eve week. We're not going to do a show. Oh, actually, get a break. Yay. And then for the next 2 weeks, I am going to be on a cruise ship. So I'm skipping two more weeks after that. But we've got shows already lined up for there. Just signed on. BitCore 2.0. We had BitCore on about a year ago. It's a library, an open source library for dealing with everything Bitcoin. Well, they've just gone to a whole new level with this, and they wanted to come back on and explain what they got going on. I mean, actually, when we interviewed them last, they were like 0.3 or something. So we skipped over 1.0. We're going to bring them back in on 2.0. That's going to be fun. I also just added, on another week when I'm not going to be here, is MuseScore, which is professional music typesetting. And actually, Aaron, I think, said he used it or something. One of my co-hosts used it. Maybe it was Dan. Anyway, it was good stuff. Still on the list, Open Unison, Identity Management, and OpenAV Productions, which is Musical Synthesizers and Performance. I am still sending out more requests to fill the rest of Q1. That list you can see at twit.tv/floss. Again, if there's a project that you want to see on this show, like almost all the shows in the last 6 years or so, you can email or call or however you get a hold of them, get on IRC with the community coordinator and then or the project leader, whatever seems more convenient, and then have them email me, merlin@stonehenge.com. You don't have to write that down because that's on the page. It's twit.tv/floss. That's what you have to remember, though, is twit.tv/floss. We have a live stream. We took a couple questions from there. Currently, we're at 8 a.m. Pacific times, on Tuesdays. at live.twit.tv. So if you want to contribute to a show, you can also be online and ask questions. Like we had a couple of questions from this week's chat room. You follow us on Floss Weekly on Google Plus, where I announce all the new shows as I book them, except the last two for some reason I forgot to announce. And then at automatically moves over to at Floss Weekly on Twitter. You can follow me on Google Plus at Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus. That's also automatically tweeted over to Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N. My typical internet handle. Again, I'm going to be on a cruise in early January in the Western Caribbean. I will actually add a new country to my list of countries. I just hit 54 countries a few months ago, and that means that I now have been in more countries than my age, except I need to get ahead of that now. So I'm going to go to one new country every year. I'm hitting Colombia for the first time, Cartagena, Colombia. In Colombia in January, so that'll be great. I got 55 countries in. And I'll be speaking at Scale in January. So if you're in the Southern California area, Southern California Linux Expo, I'll also be in Pasadena for that for the whole 4 days. I'll actually be giving my Dart talk there. And if you want to sign up, you still haven't signed up for Scale, and you're in the area, you can use the code FLOSS for a 50% discount. So check that out. That's everything I want to plug right now. Simon, anything you want to plug?
Oh, that was very extensive there, Randall. Yeah. So I quit my job this month because I wasn't enjoying it at all. And so I'm back to being an independent consultant on open source again. So visit my website down here and check out what I'm up to. I'm back to writing for InfoWorld starting January. And I will be at FOSDEM. That's the huge open source developers conference in Europe, the Free and Open Source Developers European Meeting. If you live in Europe and you've not been to FOSDEM, it is a real experience, quite unlike any other open source conference or event that you've been to, with a vast range of people speaking many languages, working on many projects with many backgrounds and many interests. And you're bound to meet somebody new and interesting if you come along to FOSDEM. It's a great place to go. If you'd like to keep track of what I'm up to, I'm Webmink on Twitter. I'm Simon Phipps on Google+. And you can find my columns, as I say, in InfoWorld starting in January again. And you'll also find me now involved in the LibreOffice community because I was elected to their board of directors this weekend. So
awesome.
I'll be starting as a director there just after FOSDEM and trying to make awesome things happen with LibreOffice, which I don't know if you've seen, is just getting ready to have its cloud version go live. There's a beta version of LibreOffice Online integrated with OwnCloud that you can go try. And that's going to be a fantastic avenue for the open source community. Finally, an open source alternative to Google Docs and to Microsoft 365.
Awesome, awesome, cool. Yeah, I did not know about that, so I'm glad you got the little plug-in for that. Well, Simon, thank you again for being my co-host on the show. We do not do this often enough. We will maybe have some more time to do that starting in the future, huh?
Yeah, we need to crack open a bottle of whiskey and have a show together, you know, with a virtual toast and maybe,
awesome.
You know, dig back into the archives of open source memory and bore people with geezers doing stories of the old times.
Yeah, back when SourceForge was the thing. Back before Git. Back when we used CVS and SCCS.
Back when CVS was a novelty, you know.
True.
We were using SCCS for what I was working on.
And then SVN came along.
Using source management at all was a novelty for the first project I worked on at IBM.
Yeah.
But that's for another show.
Indeed. We're out of time. So thank you again, Simon. And thanks to all of you for watching this show or listening to the show, however you get this. And we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.